Good morning. This is the time and place for Idaho Water Resources meeting number 2-12. It's January 27th at 8:30 in the Idaho Water Center. Mr. Patton.
Mr. Chairman, first item on the agenda is roll call.
Mr. Cuddy is absent. Mr. Alberti?
Here.
Mr. Chase?
Here.
Mr. Beck?
Here.
Mr. Rabel?
Here.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Here.
Mr. Graham?
Here.
And Chairman Newley?
Here.
We have seven.
We have a quorum. Yep. Mr. Patton.
Mr. Chairman, item number two is agenda and approval of minutes. We see no proposed changes that need to be made to the agenda. And you have four sets of minutes in your workbook for approval, number 6-11, 7-11, 8-11, and 1-12.
Do I have a motion in reference to the minutes? No. Next item.
I'd move that we approve the minutes as printed.
So we have a motion to approve minutes 6-11, 7-11, 8-11, and 1-12. Do you have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Patton.
Mr. Chairman, we're at item number three on your agenda, public comment. At this point, the board will allocate a period of time for the public to address the board on subjects that are not otherwise shown on the agenda. I understand there are a number of different folks who want to address the board this morning.
Good morning. We have folks who would like to address the board could come forward, state their name and who they represent. This would be a time for public comment. Do you have any list, Brian, of who you'd like to come first?
I understand that we have some representatives from the Eastern Snake Plain Recharge Alliance.
Great. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Aspel, and I represent one of the representatives of the Eastern Snake Plain Recharge Alliance. Just to briefly tell you how I got here, introduction. Well, I currently live in Rexburg. We have a farm in Blackfoot where I was put on in 1988, I was put on a board. Canal board notified after the meeting that had happened, and I've been on the board ever since. So last spring we heard about a recharge efforts that Al Anderson, Dave Tedhill, and others were starting a project, and our board was very interested. We met with them and became involved early on with this effort. I think you've all got a handout. The membership of the Recharge Alliance consists currently of the Fremont Madison Irrigation District, New Sweden, Idaho Irrigation District, Blackfoot Area Canals, and I represent the Blackfoot Area Canals. And then in turn, at our last alliance meeting, was nominated to co-chair the alliance, along with Ralph Eisen, who will speak here shortly. The Snake River Valley Irrigation, the Idaho Groundwater Appropriators, Palisade Water Users, and Upper Snake Mitigation Solutions, those are the groups that constitute the alliance. The goals of the alliance, the next page, are to develop, implement, and maintain a privately funded and manage recharge system using waters of the Snake River to add waters to the aquifer, to enhance aquifer levels, and discharge to the Snake River strategic locations, and to develop a market for the resulting credits. You might ask why we as canals chose to get involved. There are several reasons. One of them was obviously we saw potential to earn some money for our owners of our canal system by managing recharge, by using our facilities to do recharge. We also viewed it as a way to help many of our members of our own canals are also groundwater appropriators, have farms that use wells, and a way to help mitigate the problems that they may have in the future. But I think the overriding thing that all of us as canals agreed on, it was the right thing to do. Because we saw the water going down the river last year that was not being utilized anywhere or stored, no way to store it. We wanted to be a part of the solution. And the organization consists of providers such as canals or other entities that own water. The recipients, in this case, is the Idaho Groundwater Appropriators, and the manager of the program is Upper Snake Mitigation Solutions. On the next page shows the recharge that occurred last fall. In black is the amount that was recharged by members of the alliance, and there's others in the eastern. The red ones are the others in the eastern Idaho that did recharge as well. And in addition to that, this was recharged a year ago in the spring, but this is just what would happen last fall. So So a total of 42,920 feet above American Falls. And I did want to point out that a lot more could have been done with a couple of conditions. One, if we, the canals knowing, you know, because the canals all had to take a risk and an extra cost in maintaining water in the systems longer than they would have normally liked to do. So if we'd have known the value of the water, if what there was in, what the potential return was, there could be a lot more could be done in, than this in years when there's plenty of water. And also we need the infrastructure development, for example, developing gravel pits and running ditches or putting in culverts or head gates or whatnot to be able to use dedicated recharge sites. So this was mostly, this effort last fall was mostly just by running water through the system after the irrigation season was over. There's three main points about the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer Recharge Program that we have learned. The recharge lasts longer than we thought. You know, we thought that the water would return to the river more quickly, but it does last longer. In fact, it lasts longer than most of our reservoir waters. If you think about it, most, like American Falls Reservoir, it's typically filled in the winter and largely drained in the summer. So in this case, we have longer storage in the surface system. There's ongoing program as reserves are built up in the aquifer. Then the bleed off of the amount of water that goes back to the river benefits in several ways. Benefits junior surface water rights. It helps the surface water develop carryover storage. And of course, spreads out the flows into the river so the better usage of hydropower generation. And it would be valuable, aquifer recharge would be valuable, even if all it did was delay it for a few months, but we found that it actually delays for many years. On the next page, you can see where, this is an example of the Egan Lake recharge project that Mr. Abel will tell you a lot more about. It's up in his area. That shows the amount of water, the blue line is accumulated. This would be projections over 5 years. The blue line shows the amount of water going in, the red line shows it going out, and the yellow line, the accumulated storage. I think the bottom chart on that page is very interesting. This is a projection over a number of years. Using the model that was developed for the East Snake Plain Aquifer, the blue line at the bottom shows water that was recharged, not every year, but in years when there was excess water, and how after it shows that after about 5 years, you have a significant buildup of water in the aquifer that basically is maintained, even if water isn't put in every year, yeah, it starts to drop down, but then you get a wet year and you put more water back in there. So the pink line maintains an amount of water in storage that would not have been there had not the aquifer recharge effort taken place. So with that, I'm going to turn the time over to Ralph Isom, and then we'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, ladies. My name is Ralph Isom. I live in Iowa Falls. I'm here kind of representing Igloo. I'm on the Margaret Jefferson Igloo Board. I also am president of the Palisade Water Users Group. So I get to wear two hats today. I'm helping work with mitigation here to solve mitigation problems. Also, Palisades was a giver of water last fall. We looked at our numbers and decided we could easily put some water into that and not be too cost effective against stuff. So I kind of get to wear two hats today. One of the things we'd like to accomplish is we kind of need you guys to assign or get around this thing and understand this plan so that we can kind of go forward. The data, the numbers, I think are there. I think everything is in place. We would love to have you guys kind of take a long look at it because we need kind of urgency and timing is of the essence that we've been explained to us. So if there's things we can do to get this done quicker. As Keith has gone through, you can see the bleed off in the, how the water goes in and how it comes back to the river. Some of it is sustained well beyond 5 years, which is important. You look at the aquifer, there's some chances to really enhance the aquifer going forward, recognizing that the aquifer over the last few years has had a decline. This is a chance when we can take excess water and possibly get it back in. Our limitations right now is how to get it back into the river. We had canal companies in the upper reaches up there that were donated their use of their canals. People donated the water. So I think it's a grassroots thing from the ground up saying, hey, how do we get this problem solved? Recognizing that we can enhance the water that's in the aquifer. To say it's a problem is probably stretching a little, but we need to fix where we're going. And this is a chance when there's more than 1 million acre feet of water running out of the state every year. we ought to take a long look at how do we capture some of that water, put it back in the ground, and better utilize it. Because you never get, you never lose the water. It's just the timing of when it comes out. And this graph in here really explains on the model of the timing and the change of how it comes out, which is important. I was visiting with Stan Clark the other day, and Stan went through some numbers on a 10-year average and how much water goes over the end of Miller every year on an average. And there is a real opportunity if we can figure out how to gather that water up and get it out and get it sunk back into the river or back into the aquifer, how we can change the long-term picture of the aquifer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. This might be a loaded question, and my mind's a little slow some days. You mentioned the wheeling cost, or the $3 that we pay. When you look at the value of recharging the aquifer, how important is that $3 really in the charging of the recharging of the aquifer? Because one of the issues I see for us as a board is that there are projects we'd like to help with, and if we could reduce that cost, that would make a big difference to us. And some days I even worry that that's maybe one of the motivations to doing that is if you put enough water out there, that wheeling cost becomes a pretty good asset for your irrigation district. And just get your comments on that. I mean, if the wheeling cost wasn't there, do you guys believe enough in this program that you would do it?
I want to comment that. You know, up in our area, we had our board, our canal companies up there came to us and said they would be more than willing to wheel it as an ongoing project. Start. I think that there is some of that in the back of their mind. It's going to generate revenue. We're very adamant. One of the things I think has to be done. You can't wheel expensive water to start with. So you have to get inexpensive water. And I think once we get this program going, we have seen some canal companies step up and say they will wheel water for us. We working with IGRA, we saw that they'll wheel water for us for a cost that's kind of scary cheap. So I think as time goes on, we'll find those canal companies or those people that'll wheel water less expensive. But there will be some wheeling costs that have to be taken care of. And IGWA's looked at that. That's one of the things IGWA's ongoing looking at is what are the wheeling costs and is that a way to help take care of some mitigation that's going to be necessary.
Let me address briefly is the canal side of it. There definitely are costs, what exactly they are. It would depend on every canal, it'll probably give you a different number. One of the biggest costs we have is trying to figure out how to do our maintenance of the canal. Normally we've turned out from, you know, October till mid-April or May, and you've got plenty of time, spring or fall, to do maintenance. And that's one of the biggest issues, when do you do the cleaning? When do you replace head gates if you're trying to do that? And I know that in our case, our water manager, the canal system, wasn't very excited about it. And it's in fact been somewhat negative because even though we paid him a little extra, that makes his job harder. And so that's part of it. Then there are going to be costs of infrastructure. In some cases, we could do a in-season recharge site, like at a gravel pit, if there was a water right that was available to use. But we've got to develop those infrastructure systems to do it. So there are costs involved, but exactly what it is, you're going to get a lot of different answers from different canals.
Yeah, follow up.
Right.
Well, and I recognize that, but I guess in my mind, if we have calls and stuff, if we can prevent calls or if we're not drying up people, is that more valuable than the wheeling cost? If we can use that money to help build sites and stuff like that, that's an answer, question I struggle with every time we talk about recharge. So, just so you know where I'm at. Thanks.
Sure.
Mr. Espel, you established some benefits of the recharge, and one of them was for power generation. Have you had any contact with Idaho Power for participation?
We haven't.
Do you feel that that's an area that you could move into?
We really haven't addressed that. I think the only thought is that by building water back into the atmosphere, the aquifer use, even out the flows in the river, because obviously all the water goes down the stream. Even our power can't benefit from all that we had last year one time, I don't believe. So if we spread that out, logically, there's going to be more impacts that we haven't got.
Here's a question I've got for both of you, where this has been a privately funded effort. Do you see that continuing, or your approach here today for money from the board?
Right. Well, in our situation, if we can develop a system where we can sell credits, then we hope that would make the system for the recharge continue. I can't speak, though, I think, for the Blackfoot area canals. Most of them feel like we put up a fair amount of money for the small canals that we represent to do work last summer to determine what sites we had, to how we fit into the model, and to get the project started. But in all honesty, our first priority has to go to our canal members. And so we can't be doing things that adds to our cost without any return. That would meet our fiduciary responsibilities as board members. We may do a short term, but we can't do a long term without getting something for it.
Having sit on Equal Board, knowing, been on the front of the cow catcher for years, being forced right to the bridge of water calls being right there, we view this, some of us on the Equal Board, and I think generally throughout the whole board, that there could be some really good impacts in doing this. IGWA was one of the participants in this. We gave money to the groundwater people to put water back in the ground, understanding the value that we could have going forward. We've talked even about doing it in districts where certain districts and certain areas of water calls where you can tie the two of them together, but going through the whole board and the whole process so that you have water coming out and going in the same area, that certain districts would participate in certain areas to enhance this. So we view this going forward that there'll be continue to be private money as there has been. Certainly any enhancement we could give from anyone would help this project along. I think most of us understand there can't be big money. You talked about $3. That seems plenty to me, but you know, I don't know. We haven't run all the numbers. I think what we view is, as this goes forward, we'll figure out low-cost providers to run water. And the more volume you get, the cheaper it gets.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Pat?
Mr. Chairman, I understand that representatives from Twin Falls Canal Company would like to address the board.
Board and others. I'm Brian Olmsted, manager of Twin Falls Canal Company, and I just wanted to spend a few minutes today. There's a lot of Twin Falls Canal Company is a very complicated system, and there are places we're a very efficient canal company, but we do have some places where water gets away from us, and a lot of it is water that goes into the aquifer, and then we lose it from the system, and there's places where we can probably recapture some of that water and possibly bring some of it back up to the benefit of our storage or other purposes. There's a considerable bit of that water that is, I'm sure, really important for the perennial streams and other uses that it does downstream. But we pledge to, we want to be part of the solution. We want to help solve our problems by improving our efficiencies and recapturing water where we can. And we might need some state money to do that, but we think at this point we still have a declining aquifer, and that is the number one priority. Until we can get that aquifer into a balance, doing things at the bottom end and similar to the Kay Hardy event, I think it's a good thing. It helps solve some legal issues and some real serious water battles. It didn't, however, do anything to help the aquifer, and so we just want to urge the board to let's put as much money as we can into what the real goal is, and that's getting the aquifer into a balance and hopefully even rebuilding it some, and then we'll work on these other efficiency issues too. And we have, as a board and a canal company, developed a sustainable resource policy that we will get a copy to the board here that talks about how we do see places where we can use our water more efficiently and conserve, but we want to see for any project that's done on the bottom end of the system to conserve storage or whatever, it needs to be really overshadowed by projects that go farther up on the plain and do actually sustain the resource. I think one of the gentlemen said, well, I think we had over 3 million feet go over Milner last year, and that, you know, the more of that water we can get into the aquifer or into conversions or whatever, that's the real solution. Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Olmstead, thank you, and convey to the canal companies that the board is trying to help facilitate solutions with water users that are in essence good for the community. So we appreciate everyone's support in trying to help us achieve those goals.
Well, you folks are doing good work.
Thank you. Mr. Pat?
I understand that Mr. Lynn Tominaga would also like to address the board this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Just wanted to take a couple minutes and tell the board thank you for allowing IWA to come this last year and be partners in Recharge. Depending upon our mitigation obligation this year, we would more than likely also like to partner again this year. But to let you know, we are doing things as groundwater users. You know, in the past, there's always been people that have said, you know, there are a lot of things that need to get done. Now that our legal bills are starting to come down, it allows IWA to come forward and start doing some of those things. We put in almost $140,000 in with the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer Recharge Coalition to get some of this off the ground. We've partnered with the board. We're working with Twin Falls Canal Company, and we're doing those kind of things. We've helped construct Aberdeen Springfield's recharge site where they might be able to recharge earlier. So we've got a couple of different projects. Lake Walcott, I know that Dean Stevenson has come. And so we are very much involved with trying to look for solutions. And so we just would like to make sure that the board to know that IGWA is very thankful for the help that they've provided, but hopefully we can be partner up on a lot more projects in the future. And because we're looking for solutions, we're not out there fighting now. We want to be able to come forward and do those kind of things. So we open for any questions.
Reallocation of legal fees to actual projects on the plains, that's a really good idea. Speaking as a lawyer.
Attorneys let them get away with that.
Mr. Chairman, we agree.
Any questions for Lynn? Thank you. Mr. Pat?
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I guess I would ask if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to address the board during the public comment period.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Board. My name is Dale Swenson. I'm from Madison Irrigation District. I wasn't planning on saying anything, but I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank the board for your contribution to our Upper Valley cloud seeding program. As you know, you allocated $20,000 to us, and up until about a week ago, we hadn't been able to do very much, but things are starting to look up, and I'm sure that this last week we ran our program and helped augment the snowpack there. In that $20,000, you allocated $2,000 of it for public relations part of it to try to help expand our donation base. And we got, with that help, we hired a public relations person. Had professional experience and has the time to get out some information to potential funders, and so we think that's a big help to us and will help the long-term effort of our program. So just wanted to say thank you for your help.
On behalf of the board, thank you for working with us, and if that cloud seeding program could produce the moisture we've had in the last 2 weeks, we ought to get after it.
That's all right.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Patton.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if there's nobody else that would like to address the board during the public comment period, we're moving on to item number 4, and we'll have Water Resource Board committee reports. First one would be 4A, a short report from the Water Resource Planning Committee. I believe Helen Harrington will provide that report.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Since the last regular board meeting, the Planning Committee has held 2 committee meetings, and there is another committee meeting scheduled this afternoon immediately upon adjournment of today's meeting. The Planning Committee, through Chairman Beck, has been actively pursuing final revisions of the 1996 State Water Plan. The committee has, at the end of today, they will have reviewed all of the draft policies with the exception of the Snake River Basin. As you know, and I've reported a number of times, that has been a complicated and challenging basin to develop policies on, and therefore we've kind of held it off to the side. However, we are currently working with the Attorney General's office and staff to finalize those and ultimately bring them out to the committee, to the full board, and also get public comment. And at tab 4A in the briefing memo, you'll see a tentative schedule laid out for how we plan on taking those Snake River Basin draft policies out to the public. We recognize that they are of great interest, they have great potential impact, and that really there needs to be adequate opportunity to get public input up front prior to the final public comment period that the draft plan will have to go through anyway. So you'll see that we've laid out this tentative schedule taking us into about mid-March. And one of what we've really talked about is a specific meeting plan to get public comment. We previously had a Snake River Basin section that through the committee that was taken out, that and we got extensive public comment that was extremely beneficial in this revision process. So what will be coming out is pretty much a revised basin section. Once the committee approves a complete package, then we will and we get this initial public comment on the Snake River Basin, we will be bringing it to the board for discussion. I do anticipate, similar to how we did a couple of years ago, having a work session dedicated to going through that document. Chairman Beck, I don't know if you have anything to add.
I do not.
Any questions? Helen, I know this has been time-consuming and a struggle, but with all the changes that have gone on in Snake River, I think at the end of the day, this will be well-served. Take the time in this process. So I apologize. I know it sometimes becomes frustrating, but I think at the end of the day, we'll have a really good product. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly our intent.
Yep. Mr. Patton.
Okay, we're at 4B, a short report from the Streamflow Enhancements and Minimum Streamflow Committee. And again, Helen will provide that brief report.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I have abbreviated the name of this committee to the Streamflow Committee, just for your information. The Streamflow Committee met on December 5th to review and make recommendations on several water transactions. I'll be discussing those later in the meeting today. The committee recommended all the transactions that were brought forward to be approved, and you'll be hearing more detail on those. There's a couple of hot-off-the-press items. One is the Kokalala Lake minimum lake level. That is an application that the board put in several years ago, and it has gone through the process. The department held a hearing. It is a permit, and as of this week, it was submitted. It was introduced by the legislature, which is required by law. Senator Broadsword introduced that legislation. We have been working with her, and this is an article that was posted this morning on a blog talking about that legislation. So we just wanted to let you know about that. There's one other item I just wanted to remind the board about, that there are currently 2 pending protests that the board filed, as many of you will recall, we have the board protested several transfer applications in the Big Wood Basin. All of those protests have been resolved. Either they were resolved through conditions imposed on the permit, or they ultimately those applications were withdrawn. There are two pending protests, and those are actually located in the Salmon River Basin. And I just wanted to remind the board that those are out there. We have received a call from one of the applicant's attorneys, and I believe we'll be in discussion on that application. I don't know of any action on the other one. But I just wanted to remind you that those protests are out there. We're working with the Deputy Attorney General to, they represent you, and so they are working with those.
Bob, you have a question?
No, I'm taking you back. Kokolawa, you said there was a comment on Kokolawa this morning.
In this article that I'm handing out, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Graham, this was posted on Betsy Russell's blog. She's a reporter with the Spokane newspaper.
Is it negative or positive?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Graham, it's positive. It quotes Senator Broadsword, and it quotes some of the original application was petitioned by the Homeowners Association at the lake, and so it interviews some of them. It's very positive.
We had a meeting with the folks up in that area for information purposes, and then we had a hearing conducted by a hearing officer. And as near as I remember, there was not any opposition at all to that setting the minimum lake level.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Graham, that's accurate. It was unanimously supported during that hearing process.
Any other questions? Mr. Patton?
Mr. Chairman, we'll move on to 4C, a report from the Water Supply Bank and Rental Pools Committee. And I believe Monica Van Bussum of our staff will provide that brief report.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The Water Supply Bank and Rental Pools Committee has met twice since the last regular Idaho Water Resource Board meeting. And if you could divide this memo into those two parts, one for each of those meetings. The first regarding rental pools. That meeting was held on December 22nd of last year. The committee recommended an amendment to the Water District Number 65 rental pool procedures, and then a special Water Resource Board meeting was held immediately after that upheld that temporary addendum. The second part of the memo regards the Water Supply Bank, or the State Water Supply Bank. That meeting was held in January of this year, and it was more of an update meeting. Just to brief you a little bit on that, rental activity increased last year, which resulted in increased funding for the Water Supply Bank. The lease application fee, of course, was passed last April, which also resulted in increased funding for the Water Supply Bank. We discussed the lease renewal terms. The department has been processing new leases and lease renewals for a maximum term of 5 years, and those are subject to subsequent five-year renewal periods. We also discussed the opportunity for adding additional revenue to the administrative fees for the department, mostly through changing the rental fee structure, and the committee asked for an assessment of various rental fee structures to be reported at some later date. The last was really the action item for the committee, and discussed the current Water Supply Bank rental rate, which is $14 per acre foot, and that was set to be consistent with the Nez Perce agreement for flow augmentation, and that is due to go up. So the Nez Perce agreement is due to go up to $17 per acre foot in 2013, and the committee recommended increasing that to $17 per acre foot, and we'll bring that to you for official action at the March.
Any questions? Hearing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we're 4D, a report on the Financial Committee report, and I'll just briefly go over that. The Board's Finance Committee met on November 2nd. and reviewed and made recommendations on a number of items. They reviewed the current board policy on grants as well as the current board policies on interest rates and loan terms. And the committee recommends that both of those remain unchanged. The board also reviewed and recommended modifications to the Pristine Springs loan, at which those modifications were acted on by the full board on January 11th. The committee also recommends that up to $200,000 a year from the Pristine Springs hydropower revenues and rental income and or the Dworshak hydropower income be directed to provide seed monies to undertake projects related to the Rathdrum Prairie Camp or the Treasure Valley Camp, you know, or even potentially future camps should those be completed. And that the recommendation has several conditions. First, that the income balance above that, from those two sources above that amount, should be placed in the building fund. There should be a review of 3 years by the Finance Committee to determine how well that arrangement is working. The board would still approve actual individual project expenditures. And in the event the reserve accounts at either Pristine or Dworshak need drawn down for repairs or replacements, that the money go to build the reserve accounts back up first before it feeds this this fund for the Rathdrum Prairie or Treasure Valley camps. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions or ask if the committee chair has any follow-up comments.
We also discussed whether or not to lower our loan rate. And even though I thought maybe we would do that, the committee decided against it. Also, the $200,000, if it occurs, goes first to Rathdrum and then to Treasure Valley.
Is that from the Treasure Valley representative? Will that be in an interest-bearing account?
Yes, sir. Okay. If you do it, I anticipate it would be placed into either the revolving development account or maybe the secondary aquifer fund. We still need a little homework on that to figure out what the best place to put it and the best mechanism for that.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Mr. Bat.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, at this point, we have a quick update from the Snake River Operations Forum, and I'll ask Rich Rigby to provide a brief update on the activities of that committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to just quickly go through a couple of things that happened in the committee. When the fall operation started, Bureau of Reclamation was releasing about 6,000 CFS from the Rathdrum Falls Reservoir. And I believe that was about what was going past Milner. Now, we've had several meetings and we had a couple of teleconference meetings in the last 2 months. And in those meetings, the decision was made, or the recommendation was made to the Bureau of Reclamation that they could back off on those releases. The Bureau, I don't know, one time said, hey, we think we're going to go down to about 5,000 still. That Milner and Brian Olmstead of Twin Falls Canal Company said, well, if you want to go down a little bit more, that would facilitate some of our operations. And John Boyd of Idaho Power said, if you'd like, we can live with that. That's fine with us. So that happened. Now, just to give you a real brief update, we've got a meeting coming up next Wednesday, and we gained about 20% of snowpack in a week, at least in the Boise area, and I think in the Upper Snake. Right as of Monday, we were in the mid-80s in the Upper Snake. Hopefully, we've gained a little bit more, but I know in Boise last night, they said we were going to be dry for a couple weeks. I've learned not to say that's what's going to happen in eastern Idaho. So, well, I don't know what that is. As of yesterday, there was about 1,054,000 acre feet of space remaining unfilled in the reservoirs. Nearly 100,000 of that was in Ryrie and Lake Walcott for operational and flood control reasons. They were complying with requirements. Jackson was down about 9,000 acre feet more than it had to be for flood control, but it had been filling somewhat during the winter. Between American Falls, Jackson, and Palisades, there's a 930,000 acre feet of space in those three reservoirs. Jackson's only 200, or Palisades, sorry, is only 163,000 acre feet from full. It's really up there. It's 86% of full. American Falls is 67%. It was filling slower than normal, but since the Bureau reduced those outflows, it's really picked up fast. Mike Hughes told the Committee of Nine Wednesday night that he's going to wait and discuss the issue in the operations forum this Wednesday. He's going to see what the forecast is, and he might up the releases from American Falls. So I think we've had great cooperation. It's been very positive. Good sign, I think. It's great to know, again, what Mike says. I want to talk that with the operations forum. It made me feel positive about our experience. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions?
Mr. Yeah. Chairman, Rich, when do the flood rule curves come into play on Palisades? When, if Palisades is that full, when will the Bureau begin to make some releases out of Palisades for flood control?
I suspect it's going to be fairly soon. I don't know exactly, but I think it's March, February, March time frame. They have to have a certain amount of space. From a space standpoint, the good news is we have a low forecast. In other words, there's not a compelling need currently to release water.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I do have a question for Rich.
Roger.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Follow up on Jeff's questions. If that's the case, and you know, over in eastern Idaho, we've had a mild winter. Is there an increased opportunity to recharge aquifer earlier on if those releases take place?
Well, probably if it's a short, small snowpack, we tend to have an early freshen. The reservoirs, they should fill. So the board's right, probably will be on. I think it's more likely to be on in March than April, than May and June. So the way it looks today. But there's a lot of year.
Well, there's not snow in the ditches. That's why I wondered if there's an opportunity.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, this question may be more for Brian than Rich, but probably either one of them could answer it. Technically, the board's right would be on today.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, that's correct. The board's right is on today. We just have no way to deliver it.
Any other questions? Thank you. Thanks. Mr. Patton.
Mr. Chairman, we're moving into agenda item number 5, the board's financial program. And if I could, what I'd like to do is move item C, an update on the groundwater district revenue bonds. Up front, as I see Mr. Wrigley's here, and I'd like to get his report in front of the board and then get him back on his way and finalizing the remaining details.
That's great. Any objection for the board? Not. Mr. Wrigley. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm very happy to be here with you today. And I do appreciate getting out a little early. We're trying to get the final official statement posted, which there's securities requirements and things, so that's the primary task today. So
we'll get you out of here.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the Series 2012A and 2012B groundwater district bonds that you issued were sold on the 18th. And it was a very good sale, and this created a lot of firsts for the board and for the state of Idaho. Finally, there is an irrigation bond in the public marketplace that's a rated bond, and with a rating agency and with a market that understands what water is, and what water rates, water rights, water mitigation. They could get to an understanding of that, and the market responded very well. Now, it took a lot of months to get to that point, but that I think you should view that as very favorable for other things that could come. And in my own, I guess I'd call it biased opinion, this financing was the very thing that all your authorities were put in place for since 1965 to in terms of financing. But in a nutshell, what happened, as you know, the 2012 Series A was the tax-exempt piece. Those bonds were in the time period 2024 to 2032. There was $17,960,000 of that amount. The Series B, that was the tax-exempt. The Series B was the taxables, and those were those that were earliest, and those went from 2012 through 2024. In terms of sales, of those total bonds, what we call retail are being sold out in $10,000 and $20,000 pieces. They were sized in $5,000 pieces, but they went out in anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 in orders. There was 2 million that were purchased there. Idaho institutions purchased another 7.8 million. So that's a total of 9.8 million of the total amount that went to into Idaho. Now, there's a possibility, I'll be meeting here at 11 o'clock with one more Idaho institution, that they may purchase 500,000. And that 500,000 was originally purchased by a Eastern institution, one of the big funds. And as those folks do, they purchase something, and a few days later, their computer indicates they can make a quarter of a penny. They flip it and put it back out. And so we've contacted that firm and meeting with them. So, and they've said that they want that. So if that occurs, that'll put 10.3 million, or roughly a third, into Idaho. Now, if I can send a couple of things around here. Director here, and go this side. What I'm sending you is some pages that I've pulled from the closing number set that everyone is working on that we can go over. I'll send this around. And this second piece is coming around, has a little color on it. That will be the breakdown and the impact to the groundwater districts themselves. So, okay, that first sheet is the total sources and uses. You see the par amount of each bonds and the uses of the funds. There was a little bit of reoffering premium on some maturities and a little bit of original issue discount on some other maturities. We tried to keep that at a very bare minimum because, especially when you're trying to issue bonds retail or to people in the marketplace like you and I, just normal old folks, we don't really want discounts or premiums. So there was a very little of that, as you can see there. You see the cost of issuance that are there. Draw your attention down to your the Water Resource Board fee and how that's allocated between the two series of bonds. The total of that's about $377,000, which upon February 8th, that will be wired to the board for deposit in your water management account. And then if you go over, there's some cost of issuance detail there. There's still some soft numbers in here like, miscellaneous and other. Those are still plug numbers, and what's not used there will be deposited into the bond fund and credited to the various districts. If you go to page 3, this is the consolidated debt service schedule. This is the coupons on the bonds. Now, the yields, and that's the critical thing, that's the yield, what the borrower is going to pay. That yield on that 2013 is 3%. Now, that's a taxable bond. And then they go down through that series. It's 3%, 325, 355, 385, 415 in 2017, a 512 in 2021, and then a 512 25 in 2024. And then the tax exempts started yields of 425, 440, 455, 465, 75, ending down there 5.019 in 2032. Now, if you'll turn to the next page, overall you'll see the average coupon on the entire issue is 4.87. There, actually, it's the third in the series. It'll say page four down at the bottom. If you go down to the true interest cost, is a good statistic, 5.086. And if you look at the all-inclusive, that is everything associated with this deal. Underwriters, issuance cost, Water Resource Board fee, treating all of that as an interest cost, and all the various lawyers have been involved in this thing for months, 5.139 for a 20-year financing. So on something that is a nonsuch, that the market had never seen this kind of a thing before. That's a pretty decent financing. If you look up, I included a couple of pages here that show you the just the individual breakout of the tax exempt. You'll see the tax-exempt piece, about a 486 average coupon. The all-inclusive on that is a 5.04. And then if you go to the similar, the very last page in this, page 29 at the bottom, but again, a 490 average coupon and an all-inclusive of 534. So all in all, placing the more expensive debt at the beginning, putting the least interest rate debt at the tail end, we got those two things pretty well balanced, so that worked out. Well, the tail of the tape is on the next page, the color sheet, that looks something like this. And this is, as it breaks out to the borrowers, on the left-hand corner there is, that's the debt service on the bonds, the Water Resource Board's bonds. The various documents require your borrowers to assess themselves and to pay that debt service. Now, we got the market to understand that assessment is not like an assessment for an LID or anything like that. This is as close to a full faith and credit, unlimited general obligation as you'll ever get, and not call it a general obligation. It's a levy of assessment, not assessment of a levy, but just those three words, if we could have had them reversed in order, this likely would have been an A rating, but we couldn't get past a Baa1 because the word assessment. But you'll see the what each of the four districts have to pay. For instance, there in, go to 2013, where $2,688,845 is a bond payment. Aberdeen will assess enough to pay $470,547, and going on across $336,105 for Bingham, $806,653 for Magic Valley, and $1,075,537 for Northside. And then if you look at the last, or the next four columns, those are the cost per acre. And that will go down through that whole time period for Bingham at $3.29 per acre, $2.58 per acre for Bingham, $6.32 for Magic Valley, and $10.09 for North Snake. Now, the documents require them to assess themselves like any water revenue bond, whether any city water revenue, so that's where this strangeness came along again. They will assess and raise 125 coverage. So for every dollar of debt service, they'll raise $1.25 as soon as the full amount of the the payment is there with the trustee, then that'll all be returned back to the various owners of that. As well, the there's a debt service reserve of, it's structured in here, as you'll notice on the other page, of a little over $2,692,000. That can be drawn on if there's a shortage. There's the joint and several liability aspect of this, so if one district's a little short, the other three make it up. At the end of the payoff of all of the debt, that debt service reserve fund is returned to the owners, to the four districts. If they draw on it, they have to refill that and build it back up. Now, theoretically, we get to the very end, the last payment can be paid out of that at that time. They wouldn't have to assess it at that time. Now, these numbers, impacts to the districts will change if and when Southwest Irrigation District does come into this thing. That they'll come in by contract. There'll be things that have to occur, both some official actions of the board, some things with attorneys to make sure that whatever that arrangement is doesn't violate any of the covenants associated with this bond, and particularly the tax-exempt pieces of the bond. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that's kind of what's happened here with this thing. It's worked very well. The districts themselves, members in the districts, were very active in purchasing some. We had everyone, all the districts, provide names and telephone numbers. We missed a few of those folks because we would get numbers for shops, and leaving voicemail in a farmer's shop, we found they may not get answered for a long time, if ever. So that I know there are one or two of those that we did find some other ways of contacting them, but there's one man I know that we couldn't get to because of his shop phone. So Mr. Chairman, that concludes the report. This closes on February 8th with the purchase of all the facilities. That occurs on February 29th.
Bob?
Jim, you mentioned how much of this $89 million already has gone to Idaho. We didn't have a stipulation in this bond that so much of it had to be sold to Idaho. Did we, like we have before?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Graham, no, there was no stipulation on that. It was just kind of understand to put as much as possible. That's been the board's policy for years, and I had not heard you rescinded that or didn't have that in
store. It's working anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Vince?
Mr. Chairman, Jim, at $377,000, the board, there's that board fee in there. Is that the actual cost? Is that just a pass-through number?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alberti, no, that number is calculated according to the maximum that the board can charge under IRS regulations. And that can be, if you can think of it, it's the present value of an eighth of a percent added on to the interest rate in the overall loan. So if think of it as, you've got the overall stream of debt payments at 5%, and then you go back and add an eighth of a percent, that comes down through, so they're going from five to an eighth, and you present value of that stream, it's the difference between the two. So we use, and the board's used this for years as that IRS regulation as their fee schedule.
So what expenses did the board have?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alberti, I don't. They had staff time and considerable staff time, and I've not seen a number as to what that cost. Mr. Patton and Mr. Holman spent a lot of time reviewing documents and that kind of thing, so there was a cost associated with that.
And hopefully that cost is less than the $377, so there's a net revenue to the board is really the base of my question.
Right.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Alberti, when we do these, we don't actually cover staff time or any of those other costs, you know, out of it. What we have done historically with those board fees, you can think of it as a loan fee almost, we put it into the board's revolving development account or water management accounts, you know, so then it makes more cash available in those accounts, you know, to loan out, you know, for other projects across the state.
So it's basically a revenue back to the board.
Yes, yes. That this will be straight cash right back into the board's revolving development account.
Mr. Chairman, you can, members of the board, you can say that's kind of similar to a bank down there that charge you a fee of a loan fee. I've had a number of them that'll charge a 1% fee. So in that case, this would come out about $339,000 or so. if that type of fee structure, but you're limited by Internal Revenue Service regulations.
One question, Jim. We talked about trying to have it insured. At the last discussion, and I think Leonard had asked the question, so I just want to get a status on what happened in that scenario.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, there are only two bond insurance firms left among the living. The rest have all passed into history. Bond insurance is held in fairly low esteem in the marketplace. We were approached by Assured Guaranty after the rating was posted, and we submitted all the materials to them for insurance. We never really got anything back from them. They wanted all the materials that was given to them, so they never really qualified it. But what we started seeing was a lot of pushback from investors, all the funds, and even right down into the retail, that we were better without them. That's been the history of bond insurance here lately, is bond insurance doesn't add any value like it used to, and you pick up considerable pushback.
Leonard.
What kind of a charge would they have put against it if they would have got the insurance?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Beck, historically, this probably would have been along the lines of 40 to 60 basis points, or 4/10 to 6/10 of a point on total principal and interest. And that would be the, I probably don't have that really quickly here, but that would be
130 to 150,000.
40 to 60 basis points on about 55 million overall would have been their fee. And that insurance, it needs to pay for itself, or you don't do it.
Southwest, you mentioned. Do you have any idea on timing?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, they're scheduling an election. I believe it's here in February.
February 8th.
And then following that election, they will have to go to a judicial validation. And that can take anywhere from 60 to 90 days time. That's noticed up on the court calendar and goes forward from there. So it'll likely be maybe the 1st of June before they're ready to come into this.
Before we let you go, any lessons learned for the next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, a great number of lessons were learned here in the due diligence that we had to perform for Moody's. One thing, they needed to know value of the real estate that was out there. And in digging out those real estate values, the county assessors were the best source of that data. But as you know, agriculture is assessed at an exempted value, which is an extremely low statutory value, as it turns out, $560 an acre, and this land is worth anywhere from, depending on location, water system, $4,500 to $6,500. But we did take the department's maps on the groundwater districts to the Idaho State Tax Commission. They got together with the staff's geographic information system, I guess the right term, together with Tax Commission's Geographic Information System, and produced tax code areas for the groundwater districts. And then we can take those tax code areas that were on disks back to the various counties and overlap on the county geographic information systems, and that produced value of lands and things on the land of value considerably in excess of $5 billion. And what we learned is that there is, for other things, there's probably a mechanism that we need to investigate further for maybe in shaping districts, collecting data, collection systems for things. The other thing that's learned, that, not only on this, but on another financing that you had down in the Bear, there's a need for some type of a district that's like a groundwater district that can be identified by the IRS as a public governmental entity. So we can capitalize on what we've learned with this tax exemption, and also move the assessments up into the range of that full faith and credit general obligation rather than an assessment on a specific farmer's piece of land.
I guess that really was the crux of my question, is that we ought to take this after you get outside your SEC requirements to get this finalized, but once we get a chance to take a deep breath, we ought to come back, look at it from a policy perspective and see if there's changes we could help facilitate that water user support that would make the next time we'd like to utilize this vehicle easier and maybe even more cost efficient.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that's correct. We've got something here that you can go forward with, and we do need to capitalize.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Jim, what was the value of the land per acre again? You said it, and I didn't quite hear that.
$4,500 to $6,500
an acre is the numbers that we were given as the sales values on land that's changing hands out there.
And you used the number $5 billion.
$5 billion, and that
there's
number,
a million acres, so that figures out about 5,000 on an average. Is that correct, Ben? Is that?
You take that $5 billion and divide it by the 500-something thousand. Here, that'll give you an average value. But there's improvements in that $5 billion number.
Okay.
And that $5 billion number, the county appraiser just doing what the county appraiser does, collects all of that data, any sales that he hears about, and reworks that, and essentially has this all there that can be pulled out.
Any other questions? On behalf of the board, great work, Jim. Thank you very much. I think this was not an easy process, and it took some time and diligence, and we appreciate your effort in getting this done for us. So.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I appreciate the opportunity. To me, this was I worked a lifetime to really do a water deal, and this is a water deal. We did something that involved agriculture. This is not a water deal.
Jim, I was going to ask you what took you so long, since you said we started in 1965. But
I just hate that kind of precept upon precept thing. That gets a little complicated. I wish we could have done this a lot earlier. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Patton, should we take a break?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest that.
So what?
Take 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Okay.